Every day, thousands of people enter the water for a dip at Coogee Beach in Sydney. Thousands, just at that one beach. The ocean is central to life if you live near the coast in Australia. For so many of us, it's our happy place. So when something bad happens, like it did last week, a young woman was bitten by a shark in the middle of a sunny winter's day, it can make that deep blue water feel different. We rehash the same debates over which preventative measures or protections were in place, what we could have done to avoid danger. But often these conversations only stoke our anxiety and fear. If the water's your happy place, how do you feel safe to get back in? In a minute, you'll hear from a woman who has grappled with this question herself after being attacked by a shark 8 years ago. You're also about to hear from a researcher who'll help unpack our perceptions around shark attacks. But I also would love to know from you, is this something that plays on your mind? If you're a regular beach goer, how do you weigh up the risks and decide when you're ready to get back in the water when you hear a shark bite story? With me is Chris Pippin-Neff, an Associate Professor of Public Policy at the University of Sydney. Chris's research focuses on community attitudes after serious and fatal shark attacks. Chris, welcome to Life Matters.
Hello.
So Chris, you've surveyed people all over the world following clusters of shark attacks. What's the kind of usual response immediately after?
So it's, and I'll just acknowledge this is quite a strange field to study, because I specifically look at clusters in these communities that are highly emotional. Mm. These are traumatic incidents for the individual, for their family, and for the whole community in coastal communities. So I just want to note that it's, you know, it's quite a widespread degree of distress that these things cause. So when I go into those communities at that kind of delicate moment, you know, so the, I think the first response, it's, there's sort of a cycle to it, and it begins with, you know, the shock and in sort of shakenness of the disruption of the beach as a normally safe place to go in the water to someplace that's dangerous and something terrible that's happened. But there's also within these communities, especially coastal communities, an understanding of the dynamic nature of the ocean and that it is also the wild. And so part of it also for these coastal communities is understanding that whether it's rips or blue bottles or sharks or whatever it is, that the ocean is constantly changing. So that is sort of the second phase. And then you come around to what are you going to do about it? And that's the third phase.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about, like, we're having this chat on the radio today. There's been lots of coverage of this over the last week since this particular incident happened in Coogee. How much of a role is the media playing in influencing attitudes or fears?
I think quite a lot, and it's one of the reasons why I've been a bit outspoken on it. I know I sound like this, but I'm Australian and American, and I've lived here 20 years. Coogee's my local beach. And there are a lot of scientists who work for state agencies that can't speak because for lots of different reasons. So for those of us in academia who do this research, we kind of feel it incumbent upon ourselves to talk about it because the media narrative that your question is about can be really strong. So whether it's, you know, the shark call question and you see it sort of pop up on everybody's Facebook, like yes or no, or whatever it is, the media narrative is really powerful and it makes a big difference to how people view the nature of the incident and specifically whether it's seen as intentional or accidental. So if it's seen as like the shark was intentionally, you know, essentially biting someone, then fundamentally changes it than if it's perceived as, you know, a mistaken identity or some other factor.
I know that your field of research is on human attitudes, maybe less on shark attitudes, but what do we know about what motivates these sorts of incidents?
So we know that there are three reasons that sharks bite people. So and I do say this as a social scientist, but I do have 3 degrees and a PhD and a master's in this. And the first is defensiveness. So we're a land animal. That sharks don't know what we are. Mm. So when they bite us, it's because they don't know what we are, not because we're prey. So it's either defensiveness, that they think we could be there to hurt them or to potentially try to eat what they're trying to eat. The other is curiosity. And it's a very sensitive dynamic, because you see the damage, obviously, that sharks can do to people. But if you were to look at it across the spectrum of the way sharks sort of curiously explore the ocean, it doesn't really look that different, but obviously the results are dramatic and horrific when it comes to humans. So the second is curiosity. And then the third is, is that we're sort of in the way, not on the menu. So they're actively, and we saw this a little bit with the bull shark incidents in January and February in Sydney, where the sharks were actively feeding and we entered the water while they were eating bait fish and got bitten. So there was an active environment.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, talking to Chris Pepin-Neff, Associate Professor of Public Policy at the University of Sydney. Chris's research focuses on community attitudes after serious and fatal shark attacks. We're talking about this because this week a woman was bitten by a shark on Coogee Beach in Sydney, like one of the most popular beaches probably in Australia, thousands of visitors a day in peak parts of the year. And I'm asking you how stories like this shape your relationship to the ocean if you're a keen swimmer. When you hear about a shark bite, does that make you less likely to want to get in the water? How do you deal with that? Peter says, I have not been back in the ocean since 1996. I consider it too risky. Well, also here with me is Justine Barwick. She was holidaying with her family in the Whitsundays in 2018 when she was bitten by a shark. 8 years later, she's found a way to return to the ocean. Justine, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We'll get to the actual day itself in a second, but before this day in 2018, how much of your life was the ocean?
The ocean has always been a big part of our lives. We raised our family in a coastal area, and sailing and swimming and, boogie boarding, just a huge part of our life.
And then you've gone to a holiday up in one of the most sort of beautiful parts of the ocean in Australia. What happened that day?
Yeah, look, we'd holidayed in the Whitsundays for 6 or 7 years. We always look forward to our annual holiday to escape a bit of the Tassie cold and get some beautiful therapy in that lovely environment up there. So we were regular visitors and very familiar with the area.
Do you mind telling me about the actual bite itself?
No, not at all. It is a graphic story, so I do just like to let people know before I launch into it.
Sure.
I dived in just like I had done, countless times. I dived in right next to where my best friend was already swimming, and in an area where one of my other best friends had just got out of the water. Beautiful dive, probably a bit splashy, but beautiful dive in. And then as I surfaced and my head broke the surface of the water, I just felt this enormous force where the shark had slammed into me. I realised then that I'd been bitten by a shark, that it couldn't be anything else. And I turned and pushed the shark away. And that is much easier said than done. And I turned and swam back to the boat, and I remember being so surprised how close to the boat I was. And I truly think that the force of the shark actually pushed me closer to the stern of the boat. And I knew I'd been bitten by a shark, but as I was trying to get out of the water, I couldn't work out why my right leg wouldn't work. My husband and one of my friends, helped me get out of the water. And then when I was in the cockpit of the boat, I realised just the extent of the injury. I looked down at my thigh, and all of the inside of my thigh from knee to just below my groin was gone. All of that part of my thigh, all of the back and most of the front of my thigh was missing. I could actually see my thigh bone. And I knew I was in big trouble. And then I saw the spurts of blood from where my femoral artery was. It wasn't just severed, it was gone. And I knew then that I would be really lucky to survive.
Justin, you're telling this story so calmly now. Oh. I know you've had some practice doing it. That sounds terrifying.
Look, it was certainly terrifying, but anybody who knows me well, and probably particularly since the accident, but certainly in a professional sense before the accident, calm is my superpower. And I knew then that I had to stay calm to give me any chance of survival. Not only did I need to stay calm to get my heart rate down and just slow that rate at which I was losing blood, but I also needed to stay calm so that I didn't give those people around me another problem to solve, because they had enough problems to solve at that point in time.
You've clearly lived to tell the tale. Like, what did that recovery look like?
Oh, it's not so much what it looked like, but what it looks like, because I do see that recovery is ongoing, and probably rather than recovery, this is just my life now. So it certainly has changed the way I live, and it's changed the way I need to live. I have no choice but to lean into those things that are required of me to not only exist and live, but live my best life with this injury and having experienced what I've been through. So the initial recovery was obviously huge surgeries. Mm. I've managed to keep my leg through absolute hero efforts of everybody involved, but I have undergone a huge surgery to reconstruct my leg. Surgeons cut me from one side of my abdomen to the other, and they've taken pieces of muscle from there to replace my adductor muscle that was gone, most of my quadricep, and most of my hamstring as well, big nerve grafts in my leg, and of course then, you know, some skin from my tummy to cover over. So that was 18 hours I was on the table in Brisbane having that surgery, and I am so grateful. And obviously then a long period in ICU, and then a longer period in inpatient rehab, and I will never be ungrateful for the function I've been able to gain through those experiences. But rehab doesn't finish when you are discharged from an inpatient rehab facility. It's really the start of the next phase. So, you know, we're here 8 years later, and my weekly routine still includes multiple physio sessions. I also make sure that I look after my mental health, so I check in with my beautiful trauma psychologist, at least once every 3 months. I've lost all the lymphatic nodes and channels in my legs, so I'm in compression therapy all the time. So there's a lot to living like this, but I remain so grateful.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. So starstruck by Justine's calm in telling her story that I literally can't string a sentence together anymore. My name's Tegan Taylor. Justine Barwick is the voice that you've been hearing. She survived a shark attack that took most of her right upper thigh 8 years ago, talking about just how intense the recovery from that has been. I'm also here with Chris Pippin-Neff, who's an associate professor at the University of Sydney. Chris's research focuses on community attitudes after serious and fatal shark attacks. And we're talking about this because This week at Coogee Beach in Sydney, a young woman, Leah Stewart, was bitten by a shark and she remains in a critical condition. It's front of mind for a lot of people in coastal communities around Australia. We know sharks live in the ocean, but how does that shape our attitudes of how we play in the ocean as we love to do? I'd love to hear from you. One person says, you're more likely to drown than get bitten by a shark, and nobody enters the water thinking they'll drown. Culling is not the answer. Acceptance and education is. After all, this person says they don't cull bears in North America. They educate and tell people you enter the wilderness at your own risk. Justine, I'm sure that these sorts of narratives are not unfamiliar to you. Do they hit a bit differently now that you've lived this yourself?
Look, they do. And certainly our thoughts are absolutely with the family of the young lady who is, who was bitten at the weekend. And of course, the families of everybody who's had their lives touched by shark attack. Look, the narrative is sometimes difficult, and I'm sure that everybody does mean well, but, we do not get into the water thinking that we're going to be bitten by a shark, but we do get into the water knowing that they're there. And I think it is for each of us to, risk assess everything that we do in our own lives, with an element of being free from the judgment of others. So it's sometimes not helpful when we do get a lot of narrative about, there was a bit of noise when I had my accident around, oh, she was swimming at dusk and that's wrong and she did something wrong. And well, it actually wasn't dusk at all, It was well before that. So, a little bit of information is sometimes a dangerous thing. So, look, it can be unhelpful, but I think the most important thing is that we look after each other and that we look after ourselves as well.
Chris, what are we trying to do when we're perhaps looking to apportion blame?
So first, I just want to acknowledge the incredible strength of Justine in telling that story. We hear too many of them, but each one is so incredibly powerful. And that was, I think demonstrated enormous courage. What was the question?
I think it's about this blame game that sometimes comes in the wake. Oh,
yeah.
Things like this.
I push back on it a lot. I thought that Justine's point around the dawn or dusk thing is a really good point. These are, so when I do surveys and I go to Ballina or WA or Waverly or Coogee or wherever I go, or Reunion Island or the US, I ask, who do you think is to blame? And 63% of people say no one. And that's 63% in every location. Mm-hmm. So most people, 60, that's a big number. So people understand that there's a lot. I mean, the number of variables that are involved in human shark interactions is so extraordinary. The number of things that have to be going on, to reduce it down to dawn or dusk or, statistically, most shark bites happen at 12, between 12 and 3, because most people are in the water between 12 and 3. So the dawn and dusk is a heuristic that we sort of talk about. But statistically, most shark bites happen in the middle of the day because most people are in the water then. So but again, I try to really push back on the blame game, because I don't think it's helpful. And I think again, Justine's point around community support, and this is a moment to come together, not to push it in the other direction.
So Justine, one of the things that you've managed to do in the last 8 years is get back in the water. What did that journey look like for you?
It's that I got back in the water, and I also got back on the water, because you've got to remember that my attack happened on a sailing holiday. So I had a lot of things water related around me at that time. So even getting back onto the water was something really big. It's not the ocean's fault. It's not the shark's fault. It's not the boat's fault. So I still should enjoy going sailing. Likewise at the beach, it's beautiful to have a nice swim at the beach. It's really lovely. So it feels invigorating to be back in. I don't go as often now because, you know, I do need some help to get me in. But mostly it's great. And it feels really nice because I've chosen a nice hot day and, you know, the people that I love are with me. But a couple of times we've been and I've thought, no, not today. I need to get out now. And I don't even know why. I think it might be, you know, some sounds or some sensations that perhaps my brain doesn't even know that it remembers. But look, mostly it's great. We have beautiful coastlines and I love enjoying them.
Chris, what would you hope Australian communities keep in mind when we're having conversations about shark-human interactions?
I mean, I'd say we need to treat the beach like the bush. You know, Australians are so sophisticated when it comes to living in nature, understanding wildlife. This is a, you know, I've traveled the world. Australians get it better than most. And I think this point of treating the beach like the bush is, you know, is just to be mindful that the beach is this dynamic ecosystem. But I'll be honest, this is a stretch. And I've gotten quite a lot of pushback on this because there is an idea that the beach in particular is kind of Australia's front porch. It's our national identity. And we want to, you know, kind of seal it off a little bit. And I think we've just got to be mindful that whether it's rip currents or whether it's drowning or whether it's blue bottles or whatever it is, that Mother Nature is undefeated. And so, you know, at some point there is a tipping point where we do have to reconsider that relationship with the ocean, whether it's, you know, right at the beach line or out further.
Chris, Justine, thank you both so much for chatting with me today. Chris Pepin-Neff has spent 10 years investigating public attitudes to sharks. They're at the University of Sydney. Justine Barwick survived a shark attack in 2018. And thank you for your texts as well. Catherine says, I swim in Sydney's eastern suburbs beaches from time to time. I'll probably be apprehensive next time I swim there, but I will assume the low risk. I know it's the domain of sharks and other marine creatures. I would hate for there to be a cull. Another says, thank you for having Chris Pepin-Neff on Life Matters. They are so knowledgeable about sharks and other marine-related things. Years ago, I went to a session at the Sydney Writers Festival and have to say, Chris was one of the best sessions I have ever attended. Another fan mail for Justine. What incredible resilience from Justine.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.